Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 117. And again, if there's anybody new listening on here, this is a podcast about dogs. And there are some very strong generalities about dogs, and this is going to be one of those days. And it's about retrievers, emphasis on retrievers, and even more emphasis on those that point naturally in the upland field. But it's a whole dog approach. And really, it's more about you guys than your dogs, if you haven't noticed. So it's really about the people with the dogs and how to make the most of this combination that we're in. Today's is going to be, I'm going to harken back to one of the, just the most fundamental of fundamentals. And I think I skip over this a little bit because it's just sort of assumed. And I think that's a big mistake that I make. Now that I have the videos out, and this is not going to be the shameless promotion of those, but now that I have those out, and so I'm interfacing with a lot of new people with their problems and their issues and the things they talk about, and when I'm listening to them, and none of these people really know me. They're not like my clients, you know, who probably would go, oh, don't ask her that. I know what she's going to say. I hear all these different issues and things that they're having, and I just keep hearing the same fundamental thing, and that is the fundamentals. And of course, whenever I tell somebody, I think my client's going to be chuckling at this one. And I go, I think your problem kind of initiates in your basic obedience. And then they explain to me that how I'm wrong. And that's not what it is. And so, and you know, I got a little ways to go here, and I thought, well, maybe I'll try this to get a little bit ahead of that game and try to explain a few things. And if anybody read the book, there's one part in there, I don't even remember what chapter it's in. And when I told a story on myself on that, I was having trouble with a dog in the upland field that had been pointing, and this isn't really about pointing, but he had been pointing, and then he stopped, and he would point and then just bust the bird up. And then he was dechased, so he would just stop then. And I mean, I'd lost this beautiful point and hold, and I was kind of confused. And so I called a man that I respected in another part of Colorado, and I just said, I got this problem. And now I've trained a lot more dogs than this guy had because I've been doing it a long time. But he was talented. He was good, real intuitive kind of a guy. And I said, you know, this dog, it used to point and hold, and now it points and then busts the bird and then stops because it knows that's all it can do. And so I'm not going to be able to, this is not what the client wants, and this is not what we're trying to do. So I call him and I tell him all this stuff. And he goes, his first question to me is, well, how's your basic obedience? And I was insulted. I was just so insulted. I was like, yeah, you know what I'm thinking. I'm going, do you know who you're talking to? Come on. I write about this stuff. I mean, this, he goes, how's your basic obedience? And so I said, well, I really don't think that's it. I think it's something else. And he goes, okay, all right, well, if you say so. And that was our conversation. And so I get out the phone. One, I'm just insulted. It's like, how dare he tell me that I don't have basic obedience on my dog or even question it. And of course, it just was eating on me a little bit. So I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just prove him wrong. I'm going to go spend the next week, 7 straight days, right? I'm going to go out there and work basic obedience on this dog and do nothing else. We're not going into the upland field. We're not going to do any of this stuff. I'm going to go do the most intense, demanding basic obedience I can do. And I did. And I think maybe you know the rest of the story. So I go out after that week on my upland day and go out in the upland field, have the birds out, take him out there. He goes on point, never moves. Never moves. Shoot the bird, send him. Did that on the next bird. So we're back. And I called him on the phone. And that's hard now, right? And I called him on the phone and said, you were right and I was wrong. And that was, for me, a really big lesson. Now, understand the problem. And if you're not an upland person, this applies to anything. But here they are working independently out in the upland field. And this was a pointing retriever. And he goes on point, and he's well broken. He knows what he's supposed to do. And he, you know, was doing it and then just wasn't. And but he's also de-chasing. He knew you couldn't chase any bird that came up. So he would just hold his point and then, oh, bust the bird and then just stop and watch it fly away. Right? This is all upland stuff and it's bird stuff and it's in the upland field. And he tells me your basic obedience isn't good enough. And I didn't argue that basic obedience isn't the key to that kind of stuff. I just argued that mine would be inadequate, and it was. And that's a very important thing for all of us working with dogs to understand. And, you know, nobody's going to disagree. Yeah, I know, it's important. Yeah, mine's real good. My dog does real good. Everyone that I ever talk to, when they tell me their problem, and of course, in their mind, just like me, it's not related to heel sitting here and all that stuff. You know, it's something they're doing out in the field. They're doing this or they're doing that, and I mean, it's even on social dog behavior, what they do with other dogs. Well, no, he's really good unless, and then name three little special things that have to be in place, and then when they're in place, then he's obnoxious or does something terrible or whatever, and you know. But it has nothing to do with basic obedience. So I think that the purpose and function and usefulness of basic obedience is misunderstood by all of us, obviously myself included. Because when you talk about basic obedience, most of us think of the PetSmart Tuesday evening classes with the, you know, the big jar of bacon bits and you walk around and heel and sit and you teach the dog to sit when you say, you know, and I'm not going to get into the treat thing. However you do it, you teach the dog to sit and to walk with you and to come when you call or called. And so they're doing all this stuff, right? They're sitting when you say sit and they come when you call. So it's like, bingo, I have basic obedience. And so we call it good. And I think, or you go to let's upgrade just a little bit. You go to a little bit more expensive kind of a, you know, where there are trainers that have, you know, been at it for a little while. And I'm not insulting PetSmart people, but I actually don't know, you know, they may be great. I don't know what's there, but the jar of bacon bits always kind of drives me away. But you take it to something else and they have, you know, and then there's the clicker training and all these different ways to teach a dog to walk at your side, different ways to teach a dog to come when called. And at different ways to teach them to, you know, heel or sit, whatever it is. So you have them carrying out these actions that you want, and we call it good. And so I'm going to take it not just a step further, but a quantum step further, all right? That's just part one. If you just do that part, then you don't want understand the purpose of this interaction between you and your dog. And you're not going to get the kind of results that I hope everybody actually wants with their dog. So when we talk about basic obedience, let me just talk for a minute about what that is. And I don't want to go into a big dissertation on this because that put everybody to sleep. But basically, at least in the world of the field guys and the retriever guys, and frankly, most dogs I've ever known, because even my wiener dog and my Great Pyrenees, those are the same things that I would say to them. But you have heel, set, and hear. And you can add, you know, some of your addressing on there, stay, and different stuff. But I'm talking about the three that give them a specific action that they must undertake. So, and for the sake of example here today, I'm going to use hear, heel, and set. So hear means come to me if you're not by me, and if you're by me, it means move closer to me, move just an inch a little bit closer. Don't jam into me, but just inch the front of you a little bit closer in my direction. So if you're on my left side, move the front of you a little bit to the right. If you're on my right side, move the front of you a little bit to the left. So that's what here means. That's all it means, right? Sit means to drop your bottom to the floor or to the ground. That's all it means. And if you give either one of those commands, it means carry it out until I tell you that you're finished, okay? So in other words, it's not like, okay, drop your bottom to the ground, get up and go because you did what I said. If you ask a dog to sit, again, clarity is everything when you're interacting with a canine. So if you tell them to sit, and that means drop your bottom, It means stay in the bottom dropped position until I tell you to do something else or tell you that we're finished. So people don't think through sit all the way. But sit means drop your bottom, keep it there until I go okay or here or heel or some other thing. You can't make it an open-ended thing for a canine brain, okay? You can't, because if you leave it open-ended, that gives them choice. And when you give them choice about undertaking a task, they may choose not to do it very long. So unless that's your intention, let them understand when I ask you to sit or to heel or to do this, okay, that's what you're going to do until we're finished and I cue you that we're finished, or until I tell you we're doing something else. So yeah, the retriever people, generally the field people, don't use stay because sit needs to mean sit. I mean, when you're blowing the whistle, when they're running 250 yards away from you in a dead run and you blow a whistle and they turn around and sit, you don't have the stay whistle. You just have a sit whistle. And they're supposed to sit there until you cast them or move them in whatever direction. So it's the same thing close to you guys. If you tell them to sit and you walk 20 feet away, they should sit. So when you have basic obedience, sit should be to that level. And if you don't have it to that level, then you don't have sit yet. And then you don't do that in 2 days. You know, it might take a week or two, and depending on the mental maturity of the dog, a little bit longer for them to, you know, they'll sit by you, but if you step away, it's like, hey, whoa, I can't sit if you're not by me. And so that's a whole nother thing you have to teach them. So that's what sit is. And then heel is to be at your side. Pick a side. If you're a two-sided guy, then make sure that they are very clear as to which side they're supposed to be on. I'm not smart enough for two-sided, so I just have them on one side. And, you know, some people have them on the left, some people have them on the right. Pick a side, have the dog be on that side. So that's what heel means. So heel means to be at your side. Now, if you take off moving and tell them to heel, then they are to stay at your side, which means they're to move with you, okay? I mean, there's a distinction there. Heel doesn't mean, you know, walk with me. Heel means be at my left side. So if they're 20 feet over somewhere sitting away from you and you say heel, they need to come over to your whatever. For me, it's left side generally. Come over to my left side and sit down. Heel means be at my side. And if I'm not moving, pretty much you're going to default to a sit unless I say something differently. So heel means to be at a specific side. And then it means to be at your side if you're moving, if you're not moving. It means to be at your side if you're moving forward or you're moving backward, or if you're changing directions, or if you're turning a circle. They need to stay at your side. So that is what heel means. It means to be at your side. And so if it's that clear in your mind, then you can teach that to your dog, that that's what heel means. Okay, so that's sit and that's heel. And then here means, as I said before, come to me. If you're away from me, come directly to me. Not, doesn't take a big bow and eventually get this direction. It means make your best effort to come directly to me. And I'll either tell you to sit in front of me or to heel around to the side. So we will end this request by letting you know how I want it to end. We don't leave anything open-ended when we are teaching. Nothing is open-ended. Open-ended, you know, you can test out and see what it is they're thinking. But when you're teaching, you have to give them a logical conclusion. So when people I see, they call their dogs, and their dog kind of does a flyby, right? Woo, does a flyby, and then they call it good. So what does here mean then? Does here mean do a flyby, buzz the tower, keep going? That's not what happens when you get the open-ended stuff. So teach them that it means to come directly to you and either sit in front of you or sit at your side in the heel position. So those are what those three things mean. Okay, once you teach that, you have only opened the door to what basic obedience can do for you. And this is, I have to work so hard. I need to get this across. The reason that we teach these three things is because these are extremely useful behaviors and thought patterns. And when we have these firmly installed in a dog's understanding and a dog's responses, then we use them for all the other aspects of their life and behaviors. And these are the tools that we have to troubleshoot and to problem solve. And the execution of these basic obedience exercises is our barometer. It is the thing that tells us, where is this dog's state of mind? What is our relationship? And is it what I want, or is it not what I want? So many, 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 many problems that I hear about, and this has been in a great number of podcasts that I have given and articles that I've written. People tell me about problems they have. You know, my dog is, and it's usually, you know, oh no, he's good, obedience good, he's real good on a leash or off leash or whatever. But he does this thing, and what was it? I think I said in the last podcast, the dog wouldn't make the effort to jump in the truck because he'd pick him up. So I used basic obedience, right, to fix that problem for him. So when I had the dog, taught it that it needed to jump onto my trailer wherever I wanted it to go, or in the back of my truck, it had to do that. You know, I had taught it by unpleasantly putting it where it needed to be when I said, or throwing a biscuit in if it's that kind of a dog, and taught them, hey, when I say kennel, or in my case, I use their name because I got a lot of dogs, you know, that means jump in there. Well, the dynamic between these two people, the man and his dog, was not that. And he had always had been lifted up onto the tailgate. So I used the basic obedience because I knew how his basic obedience was. So I said, no, I'll get him to jump in there for you. So I went, and I mentioned in the prior one, I did basic obedience. Not like real sweet, like Cinderella type. I mean, I kind of got after him a little bit. And then I enforced sit on him. And he is a big softy of a dog. So me doing just a kind of a jerk on the choke chain and leash, That was a big deal to him. And so when I said sit and I enforced that, and then I said kennel, he jumped right in. Now, how does that make sense? All the old trainers that know stuff, you know, they're going, oh, indirect pressure on sit. That's a real great thing. And that's what it is. It's indirect pressure. It's actually direct physical pressure on sit. But that pressure on sit is an indirect way to get them to jump in the truck. Now, probably not going to work with you if you don't want to get in my truck and I'm trying really hard to make you, right? You and I are going to have to debate and argue. I may have to bribe you. I may have to threaten you. I don't know. I'll have to do something. That's not how it is with a dog. So when a dog understands that you want him to jump into the truck, say, but he doesn't want to jump in the truck, or he goes, no, 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 you do like you always did where you pick me up. I like that so much. So I gave him something else. I got his mind off of the, oh, you always put me up. Go ahead. That's what his mind was on. And I went over there and it was like, sit. Boom, I got to sit. Okay, I think I'll just get in the, kennel, and then I won't have to, she won't be getting after me on this obedience stuff. And so he does. I mean, I've had it work hundreds and hundreds of times. And so many times when dogs are getting ready to go home and they know, you know, well, he's never jumped into the whatever they've got. And I'll go, well, he will now. It's kind of snotty, I guess. And I just do a little indirect pressure on sit. And then, of course, they know me and they're going, I know I'm going in here, so I'll just jump in now. So I'm using the good job on basic obedience that I did to get this dog to do a lot of other things that otherwise I wouldn't really know how to do. Okay, that's just one example of indirect pressure on sit. Another thing is dogs that jump. Now, I'll say this about jumping dogs. We know we create them by teaching them to be jumping dogs when they're puppies, and we pick them up and they can assault us in our physicality. We let them assault. And then all of a sudden when they get big enough, we're going, hey, I don't like this anymore. So I'm sorry. That's, you know, the dog. That's not fair to the dog, but that's always what happens. So there's all kinds of get down, no, stop, off. You know, there's all these commands. But, what action for the off? What action are they to take? What are they going to execute when you say get down or off? Right? They are to reverse what they're doing. And dogs don't do reverse thinking. They don't do it. So it's like if I tell you to think of an orange, that does, or not think of an orange. If I say, do not think of an orange, what are the first thing that crosses your mind is this orange, right? And you're an intelligent human. Dogs do not do reverse thinking. They don't have a no stop doing what you're doing thing. Just like quiet. You know, if you have to say quiet 500 times, it's not working. You can't tell them, no, stop making the noise that you're making. And you can't tell them, you know, stop jumping up on me. But if you want to end this bad habit that got started, you have to give them something to do. That you have to give them a positive action. And so the easiest one for that is to tell them to sit before they launch on you. So when you see them coming up to you and they're launching down to get up in there, okay, tell them to sit, enforce it. Make sure if your basic obedience is good and they know that sit means sit, right when they're thinking about jumping up on somebody, tell them to sit. And then enforce that. However severely you must, to have them take you very seriously. And that's how you get dogs that have been taught to jump to stop jumping. So again, we're going to use our basic obedience to replace one thought with another clearly established thought they already have. So to jump them, get them to jump up in the truck, I get them on, holy cow, I got to sit. I think I'd rather just get in the crate, right? So I use sit enforcement to make them do something that they didn't really feel like doing. And I use sit enforcement when they want to jump on me. And so pretty soon when they don't want to get sit enforcement, they stop jumping up on you. And it really is that simple. But in order to have that work, that sit needs to be taken very seriously. So, and there's so many ways. And for people, anybody that's on the more advanced stuff, like you got a handling dog, and they're doing, you know, they won't take cast. I've been asked a lot of times, you know, my dog will not take a right angle back. You know, what do I do? How do I get him to take a right angle back? And, you know, you need to, one, practice a lot of casting drills. We're not going into that. I do a lot of right angle back casting drills. But the other thing, when your dog is intentionally refusing to try to do what you're asking, and doing completely its own thing, which is completely different, assuming that for sure that's what they're doing. They know that you want them to kind of go to the left, but they're just going to go to the right no matter what. Once again, we're going to use indirect pressure on sit. So you're going to blow the sit whistle with some sit pressure, wait it out. And if they take the wrong cast again, a little bit more enforcement on that sit pressure. And that's generally what you do when dogs just aren't trying to work with you out there. A little of that indirect pressure on sit, even though that might not make sense to you, they're going, all right, every time I try to go this direction, I get this darn sit enforcement. I think I'll kind of go the way that their hand is going and see if that, and then it works better. So just the enforcement of sit is a hugely powerful thing. So a lot of behaviors that dogs have where they're doing stuff, they're interacting with other dogs in a way that they shouldn't. They, you know, personally, I don't want your dog on mine ever. I don't even want your dog near mine. So if your dog is around, that's fine. Just keep them away. You know, social distance. I've done that with dogs all my life. But so that's always a good idea. But if your dog likes to misbehave with other dogs, then enforce something. You can't tell them, stop doing that. Stop wanting to go beat that dog up or stick your nose somewhere where it doesn't belong or go over there and get up on your tippy toes all bristled up and intimidate him. Instead of telling them to stop doing that because they don't do reverse thinking, give them something to do like heel and sit and enforce that so that they learn they don't have that option. So that kind of thing is that simple too. Now you want to get into it's particularly the upland thing. And this is from my upland people that are listening to this. I cannot tell you why this works, but so many times when I have dogs that are just you know, young dogs, and they haven't been on birds as little puppies, which that's always the best thing to do, guys. But when they're not, you know, they're pointing, and they maybe point a little, but not really very much. And they, when they catch themselves kind of doing that slow down thing, they go, stop doing that. And they run in on the birds. And it's just kind of this out of control, uncomfortable situation on upland birds, you know, which if you've done this very many times, you get that dog. Where they do show you some point, so you're like, okay, this seems really good, but they're just, you know, other days it's like there's nothing here. I'll tell you what I've done when I've been in a fortunate enough position to do it. When I have a dog that's like that in the upland field, and I don't do the cord thing and I don't all that stuff. I want them to go in there and do it on their own, and I'm not, you know, it's not getting better and better. So if I continue doing the training with them, one, my basic obedience can't be good enough. Cannot be. I learned that one lesson giving the guy a phone call wanting some expert upland answer, and it was just my obedience wasn't good enough. I learned from that one. So when I have those dogs, I go back to that basic obedience. And I mean like crazy strict. I didn't say mean, tough, hard. Crazy strict. I should be able to be walking along and say heel, and tell them to sit and run and take off, and they better stay seated. And if I call them to me here and tell them to sit halfway, they better sit halfway. And just, so in other words, I have them, they have to listen to what I'm saying. They have to bear down mentally really hard to hear what I'm saying so that they carry it out or at least try really hard. So it's not just walking around the neighborhood on a leash going, oh, look, call it good. But it's where they are listening and responding to each word I have. I mean, that's a lot of effort. You have to think to do that. It's hard. That's why I think a lot of us don't do it. But I go do that stuff, and if I can continue with the pile work, and I'm as demanding on the pile work as I am on the basic obedience. You know, when I say fetch, you have to get it. And when I say fetch to the right or to the left, you have to go to the right or you have to go to the left. And if you get confused, I'm going to teach you. But once I know you understand, you need to do it. And I'm going to come in with some enforcement if you just try to open in and opt out of it. So I go into that stuff where I make them to the best of their abilities and their intellectual capacities. I make them have to think about stuff, listen to it, and then respond and stay engaged with me in this activity. And when I do that for several weeks consistently, and maybe if you saw you going, man, she is pretty demanding, I'll tell you. But I'm doing this for my pointing, believe it or not. So I go, and I'm not mean or tough on these guys. I'm demanding. There's a little bit difference there. They understand what's happening. I'm making them bear down mentally and physically as much as they possibly can, which is a very fair thing to do to a good dog. Then you go out in the upland field, and I can't tell you why, but somehow making those brains focus in. And I mean, it's hard. I'm not looking for total success. I'm looking for the weak spots. And then I go after the weak spots. And I make them think. And I don't do it for 15 minutes, guys. Remember, when I'm doing this super demanding stuff, it's short. It's 5 minutes or less when I'm being like that, okay? Because it's hard. And this is a canine brain, not yours or mine. But then you be doing that for a week or two, and you go out in the upland field, and I don't, again, somehow that mental focus, when they have that urge to point now is not overrun by, oh, but I really feel like doing this. It's not overrun by that anymore. It actually comes out and exhibits itself. And dogs will go on a point and then they stay there. You know, and they'll stay there. And I like to see how long they'll stay there when they start doing that. You know, sometimes it's 30 seconds. They're just, for a new guy, that's very good, right? And they'll stay there, and it's like, we're going to shoot this bird for this. This is amazing. But it always comes about when it wasn't present. You know, again, they've showed point, all right? But the desire to have a good time and chase and get stuff overwhelms that little part of them that is that trance-like point thing. It just gets washed to the side. But when I have done all of this focus, try hard, bear down, stay in your own head, stay in your own thought, listen to what I'm saying. We're working together, and this is, I want you to respond to the nuanced stuff that I'm saying. When you make them focus like that consistently, it begins to become kind of how their mind works. And then you go back out in the upland field, You have a different dog. And all I can say is I observed this so many times. I did this week. That's part of the reason I'm bringing this up. It's like, I got to tell people about this stuff. I mean, sometimes, you know, there's nothing that's going to make a dog be better than a flash pointer, at least that I know of. But sometimes you can go in there and catch that without the cords and without the electric collars and without all that stuff because you made them bear down mentally. And it's a really big deal. And the way you make them bear down mentally is, here's the hard part now, is that you have to. And it's hard, you guys. It's really hard. If you watch somebody do really great obedience for a very short period of time, because it's very hard mentally, when you watch them do that, it looks so easy. Their voice is quiet. The dog is so connected with them. The dog is super responsive. It's just like, that's so nice. It's so easy. There's so much going on right there. And there's so much that went into that beforehand. You know, they listen to what you say. They're aware of where your body is. And they are focused entirely on this interaction between the two of you. And the only way you can get to that is if you are focused entirely. You have to know why you're doing this. Did the dog give me full effort on the sit? Or 70%? Or 40%? You have to know that, right? How do you know that? By focusing on this and carrying it out every day and watching until you begin to just feel what the dog is giving you. And you just know if you're getting the effort or kind of, right? And so when it's just a kind of an effort, then they don't feel they have to take you seriously. That's your fault, not theirs. That is your fault. Anytime a dog tells you, I don't have to take you seriously, it's because they have been shown that sometimes they don't have to take you seriously. So when your dog is jumping on you, won't get in the back of the truck, isn't taking your cast, goes out there and kind of points and kind of busts and kind of just has a big time, and you got this big loose everything going on, that is a reflection of the inside of your head when you are working with the dog. So now we come to the real crux of the matter. The basic obedience you have with your dog is usually a complete reflection of how what you think about it, how much, how deeply, how intensely, and how committed you are to this whole thing. So when they're doing stuff that's not good, you know, and I get this question, the $1 million question all the time. What do you do when they do this wrong? What do you do when they don't do this for you or they're not doing that? And always my answer is, go get them a better handler. Go get them a new trainer. You know, that's so unsatisfying to people because I'm putting the blame over on them. And it's like, no, that's not, no. When my dog doesn't heal by my side, what am I supposed to do to him? And again, it's like, ask what you have done to have that dog believe that he doesn't have to be at your side or that he can pull in front of you. So, and I can just stay on this for hours. I'm not going to do that. But so those of you who have a dog that pulls, right, or gets out in front of you, that's a super duper common problem. Oh, my dog does really good. He just pulls a little bit. What do I do when you pull a little bit? What do? You sit down in your mind and go, what have I done with this dog that makes him believe that he can be 18 inches in front of me or 12 inches in front of me or 3 feet in front of me? What have I done? I'm not kidding you guys. You did something, whether it's the whole time he's a puppy, I let him pull me. Well, because he's a puppy after all, and I can't let him, right? So what have I done to let this, I let this dog pull me as a puppy. And then when he got a little bit bigger, you know, because we're walking out on the street in front of everybody and I can't be, you know, pulling my dog around on the leash because people get real upset. So you go on and hear all the reasons that they taught this dog, go ahead and pull. And now all of a sudden we don't want him to pull anymore. And what do we do to him? So remember back to all those times when you let the dog get ahead of you and just let him do it and let him pull harder. And then when he pulled harder, he's probably sped you up. And you have to go back and redo all of that. So now that you have this big dog that pulls on yours and in front of you all the time, what can you do to not let that dog do that in the first place? So now you have to put the onus back on your shoulders. You have to get good with your leash, good with your, if you have a little healing stick or wiffle bat or something where you have something to tap their chest back in place, or, you know, there's a whole, but you have to start, go back to your basic fundamentals, like the dog was 4 or 5 months old, and say, all right, we're going to be rib to rib now, dog. And then you have to keep them in the rib to rib position. And you have to figure out how to do that because you taught him he didn't have to do it. So you can't, the big corrections, you know, I'm not going to tell somebody how to punish a dog for doing what they were taught. I will not teach people how to do that. Here's how you punish the dog for doing what you taught him to do. I'm going to punish the person in a sense by saying you go back to the beginning. And you make that dog stay by your side. Not with electricity, people. Not with electricity, because then it doesn't work if you don't have electricity. But mechanically, with your leash and your healing stick or plastic bat or whatever you've got. And take teeny tiny steps and go very short things and teach this dog, this is where you're going to be. And then proceed from there. So, you don't solve the bad obedience or poor obedience by punishing the dog because the dog is merely reflecting what's in your head when you taught him all the things that you taught. And by enforcing, by teaching what hear, sit, and heal mean, by having extraordinary clarity in your mind about what it is, and then carrying that out on a very minute, small, highly focused level, even if it's only for 60 seconds the first time, because that's all you can muster, then do it for 60 seconds. But go back and reestablish, this is my expectation for this, and this is what I'm going to have you do. And you do it by enforcing what you're teaching before they do the wrong thing. So if you let them do the wrong thing, then it's too late. You have to show them what the right thing is and then enforce that and stay ahead of your dog. So this is a very complicated subject, not because of the dogs, they're very simple, but because of us and the way we think and how we look for ways to blame the animal so that we don't have to bear down as hard. But in the kind of stuff that we're trying to teach these dogs, we're asking them to bear down a lot, or we should. Because that's what makes them happier, more fulfilled. That gives them a lot of meaning in their life. Just like it is, you know, when doctors save lives and policemen save lives and people do their thing and it makes a difference in the world, that gives you great meaning. And so when these dogs give a lot and work a lot with you and carry out what their job is, that gives them a lot of meaning. And if you want them to do that well, with that level of self-reward and satisfaction, then it's by having extreme clarity in what it is you're asking them to do. And ultimately, you set all that up in your basic obedience. And it's not an easy thing. It's going to take a lot of you to think it through and to keep it real simple. And again, let's take the blame off the dog, put it back on the person who taught them whatever it is they're doing. And no, we're not going to punish them when they do what we taught them to do. We are going to go back, start from basics again, reteach them what it is we want, enforce that, hold them to it, and stay ahead of them. So that's a big topic. I hope, you know, it isn't too tedious for some people, because it's pretty much the key to everything. All the dog work you want, whether it's out in the field, whether it's high-level competition, or whether it's taking a hike with them, walking down the street, or having them in your house, same deal. Make sure they have a lot of clarity in your communications and what their expectations are. And it makes things so much better. And you don't have to be punishment-based. Just be education-based. So that's this week's offering. It's going to be 101 here for the next several days. And I think 130 degrees in some parts of California. So I hope everybody keeping their head above this and gets through the hot times, and the hunting season's coming soon. But most of all, go out and spend just a couple intense moments with your dog, being very demanding on yourself, and watch your dog reflect the good work that you do. I hope this is helpful, and I will be back soon with the next episode.